Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city of the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Thanks for joining us. What's shaking out there? Thanks for being with us on this weekend of the cold moon as we're slip-sliding our way toward Christmas and the new year, 2021. Wow, that just went by in a blur, didn't it? But we can slow things down just for a few hours tonight to ponder the world around us. One of my favorite works of fiction, book, was also turned into the movie that holds the number one spot in my unofficial, unwritten mental list of all-time favorites, The Godfather. A best-selling blockbuster written by Mario Puzo, a most unlikely guy to pound out such an epic work. Puzo was also an unlikely candidate to write the screenplay for what would widely be regarded as the greatest movie of all time. You'll get arguments about that, of course, but it's certainly a top contender even for critics who don't hold it in the number one spot. How the book came to be, how the movie was made against considerable odds with pressure from the actual mafia, all sorts of obstacles and impossible odds and problems could be the theme of its own movie. All the backstories and drama and infighting and death threats and La Cosa Nostra intrigue in real life is quite a tale, and it's told in a new book which takes its title from an ad-libbed line in the film, "Leave the gun, take the cannoli." You remember that one? Writer Mark Seal began working on what became this book about 13 years ago. He had access to many of the main players, producers, writers, actors, and his story is highly entertaining for anyone who loves the movie or the novel or both. Mark joins me in the second half tonight. He's a very engaging guy with terrific stories that you likely have not heard. In the first half tonight, we return to a topic that's largely been lost in all the hubbub about UFOs of the last year, or maybe the past 4 years. 4 years ago this week, the New York Times unleashed a story about a secret government-funded investigation of UFOs. That story set off an avalanche of media coverage that eventually led to political action, even in this past couple of weeks. Even though the story was incorrect to some degree, the program named in the story was ATIP. It did not get $22 million in black budget money, contrary to what has been reported over and over. It did not focus merely on incidents involving the military. The actual program was called AUSAP. The $22 million was overseen by the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency. The money went to a contractor that investigated both military and civilian UFO cases, but also a much wider range of weird subjects, including the paranormal, physical and psychological consequences of close encounters, and the very strange but very real connection between UFO incidents and what we would call paranormal, that is, psychic phenomena, poltergeist-type activity, creatures. Really, truly weird stuff. That's what AUSAP studied, and that's what it was spent the $22 million on. ATIP was much smaller, had a smaller focus, and came later. But even though there's been an unnecessary confusion about the two very different programs, the end result has been a very robust public discussion about UFOs, now called UAPs. Who's flying them? Are they a threat to national security or aviation safety? What's the technology? Can we duplicate it? What about crash saucers, reverse engineering, metamaterials? I'm right there with the rest of them. I'd like to know the answers to all those questions, but are we missing the central question? The technology is interesting, but not nearly as interesting or as important to me as what intelligence built them and sent them here? Why are they here? What's their interest in us? You know, around the world, there are millions of people who say they've had close encounters with the beings behind the UFOs, the visitors. Call them aliens if you want. And maybe they're from other planets, other solar systems. But the true answer might be a little closer to home, though a lot harder to explain and a lot harder to get our heads around. You know, whatever you call them, people all over the world say they've been up close and personal with them. They've had these conversations with them, ongoing communication. And there are consequences to that. The people who say they've interacted with them have come to know, call them the others. Isn't that sort of the heart of the subject, the interaction between these different species, maybe multiple species, as opposed to their vehicles, their cars, their shiny gadgets? I think that's where the public interest should be, even if it's harder for us to get our heads around that. So tonight, we're going to kind of reverse thrusters and head back into the core questions about them and us. What's the relationship? Where might it be headed? What do those people who've been there say about what might be going on? Kathleen Martin is from UFO royalty. Betty and Barney Hill were her aunt and uncle. Kathleen's mom was Betty Hill's sister. The mom and her daughter both had close encounter experiences, so it kind of runs in the family. Kathleen became an internationally known author and speaker. She worked as the head of MUFON's program that works with experiencers, and invited her here before I even knew she had a book out that teaches people how to cope with what they used to call alien abductions, close-up encounters with the unknown, that may or may not involve space aliens, because it might be stranger than that. Kathleen joins me momentarily, and we'll jump right into it. Our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from various news sources around the world. We call it Naps News. You can find it on any of the Coast websites or maybe on our Twitter feed. Among the stories there tonight, what happens to the brains and bodies of people who have close encounters with UFOs? There is evidence, physical evidence, including brain scans. A lot of those cases were collected and investigated during that OSAP program I mentioned a moment ago. There was a spate of new articles a few days ago looking at the work of Dr. Gary Nolan of Stanford, who has not only been analyzing so-called metamaterials, but also the brain scans of people who get too close to the unknown technology and beings. Not good for your health in general. Also, an essay about what you call scientism. It's kind of a religious doctrine that's taken over many branches of science, and it's kind of like maintaining the doctrine of scientism has become more important than science itself and finding the truth in some disciplines. We have a story about a pretty major finding on Mars, kind of say suspicions confirmed, and a pretty weird story about a person who has decided to transform into a post-human via implants. Not the kind of implants you might be thinking of. I mean tech implants, chips and such. Those stories and more in Naps News. And while you're on the website, check out how to become a Coast Insider. The cost is 15 cents a day if you subscribe for a year. Gives you access to a vast archive of about 1,000 interviews and programs. You can listen anytime you want, as often as you want. Among the shows available, the Art Bell Classics. And also on the site, a link to subscribe to George Norrie's Beyond Belief. That's his television show where he interviews fascinating guests similar to what George does here on the radio. It's a great deal. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and all the other animals out there in the manger. Put on a pot of Joe, slide your bod into those warm winter jammies and your toes into your fluffiest bunny slippers. Plop yourself down in a comfy spot, turn down the lights, and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Kathleen Martin tells us about the others. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. I have this picture in my head. It's the 1400s, and the indigenous peoples of the Americas, North America, Central America, are walking along the beach. They're looking out at the ocean, and they see these strange high-tech vehicles on the water, way more advanced than the canoes used by the locals. And as these ships draw closer and closer, the natives get an even better look at these high-tech gizmos, and they're amazed. But shouldn't they have been paying attention, closer attention, to the visitors who were on board those ships? Because it's the visitors, the intruders themselves, who were way more important in the long run than those wooden ships that brought them to the Americas. It's sort of what I've been thinking over the past couple of years, as so much attention has been focused on UFOs, UAPs, the tech, the materials, how they work, what's the propulsion, as opposed to the intelligence behind them. Feels like we're missing the forest for the trees. So I reached out to Kathleen Martin to help maybe refocus on what's really important. Kathleen is a best-selling author, a popular speaker. She's been pursuing these mysteries since the late 80s, is related to UFO royalty, as I mentioned earlier, works with experiencers and contactees and abductees, did that on her own, as well as with MUFON. Her latest book, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted, is one thing we'll be talking about tonight. Kathleen, welcome to the program. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be with you again.
I've looked forward to talking to you for so long, and as this this idea, this question has been kind of kicking around in my head, that you'd be the perfect person to talk to about it. You know, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I wonder if you've had a similar reaction to current events, all the Pentagon statements, the new fascination with the technology, which is all great. You know, a new UFO program is about to be formalized, approved by Congress. Are we missing the big picture by looking at the tech and not at the species or intelligence behind the tech?
Well, we know that they're looking at the tech. If they're looking at the species, they are not telling us. But I do have to say that in a recent interview, Lou Elizondo did mention that he believed that just as we, as our scientists, have a capture and release program for animals, endangered species, that they may be coming here, and he wouldn't be at all surprised if they're taking humans as well. So that is at least one statement that confirms what I've known for a very long time.
Do you have so much contact with abductees, experiencers? I don't know if they call them abductees anymore. I don't want to be politically incorrect, but contactees, certainly. The people who have had these experiences and have them on an ongoing basis, have they felt left out of the conversation?
Not really, because they are talking all around the world. They're gathering, they're talking, they're speaking out more loudly than they have in the past, and they all say that the ETs have already gone to the governments and the heads of state, the governments, the heads of business did not want to engage with them. So they then went to the people, and they have been in contact with many people through CE5 experiments now, through downloads to experiencers, and there are probably millions of experiencers around the world, and they think that they are doing their job, and that is to raise human consciousness to the fact that they are present and they do not mean harm. At least most of them don't. There are some who really don't care very much about what they do with us. They're out for what they can get. But the experiencers that I talk to, and I also run a support group, so I do this on a fairly regular basis, are just waiting because they know that eventually, and we're not too far away, we will reach a tipping point, and people around the world will know that this is true.
I know that for journalists, this is how I started into the field, into the subject, is it's a lot easier to tackle the paper trail, to look at the paper trail of documents that deal with cover-ups and agencies and government personnel and military personnel, folks who have taken this seriously behind the scenes but have told something completely different to the public. That's a good story. It's harder to speak to a contactee, abductee, experiencer, and take their word for it when, in some cases, you don't have anything else to back it up. You have their word as honorable people and maybe some scoop marks on their hand. But for a reporter who doesn't want to spend a couple of years digging into it, it's easier to do the paper trail angle, the government angle, than it is to, and riskier, I think, is taking the word of the abductees, contactees, and these fantastic stories. So a lot of the media focus has been on just what I mentioned. How would you characterize the media treatment of the experiencers that you work with?
It has improved in recent years. Years ago, I would not want to make a referral because the person would be paraded in front of an audience, and they were looking for individuals who had some personality characteristics that would make them appear a little odd in the way they dressed or the way they looked or how they spoke. And then they would bring out disinformants, the so-called skeptics, who would offer psychological explanations. They have not been doing that for in the past several years. So I've been very pleased with that. But it is not, this topic is not getting a lot of press in the mainstream media. It's on cable television shows. It's on many, many radio shows and podcasts. But in terms of UFO abduction or ET contact, depending upon the quality and modus operandi, this is not being addressed in the mainstream media, as far as I know.
You know, I think back to, and I wasn't there for the beginning of a modern UFO era, obviously, but I read these books during the Donald Kehoe era when they were really pushing for transparency and for acknowledgement of the government and the military that this stuff was real, not fictitious. And even among the ufologists then, there was a reluctance to acknowledge that these craft flying around, buzzing around in our skies all over the planet had people inside of them. And then, you know, you fast forward to the era of Communion and Bud Hopkins and the first real big hardcore work on abduction cases. And even then, ufologists and the organizations were reluctant to admit that it could be true. All right, maybe these are craft from other planets, and maybe they've got aliens inside of them, but they're not taking us. Come on, that's ridiculous. And so, there's been a dragging of the heels all the way along. I was hoping we were past it, and maybe we are. I don't know. What's your take?
Well, I think that the mainstream ufologist groups and some spokespersons for the government have mentioned that they believe that if there are entities inside these craft, that they are artificial intelligence. I read recently that no one has ever reported having one of these ETs show signs of aging, and that's absolutely false. Many people have given me that information, that over many years they've been taken time and time again, and they do age, at least some of them. So it does appear that some of them could be artificial intelligence, those who do the menial labor jobs, but it appears that there are also sentient beings who are interacting with humans.
Where do you think they're from? So in the beginning, you know, those first contactee, the famous contactee cases, they would tell these fanciful tales. Oh, we live in giant cities on Venus, or, you know, we live on planet Krypton, or, you know, whatever the names, exotic names that the pilots would have in their fanciful garb. And these stories permeated out and they got pummeled. They got beaten up. And so there was a real reaction against it, kind of a negative thing that may have had more to do with the times than the actual content of the messages. These alien editorials would be issued where they proclaim that they want to help us, that there are space brothers, they want to share technology, but always with the added message that we need to clean up our act. We better be careful of what we're doing to the planet. We better be careful what we do with nuclear weapons. And of course, we ignored all those warnings, didn't we?
Yes, we absolutely did ignore all of those warnings. And in terms of where they come from, you know, that's really difficult. My Aunt Betty Hill, for example, was shown a star map when she asked where they were from. And Marjorie Fish, who was an amateur astronomer and a brilliant woman, spent several years identifying the stars on that map. And she was only able to do that when we made technological progress and we were able to have better distance data and information on the nearby stars out 54 light years from our sun. So she was able to identify those stars, and not only that, there were special characteristics. All of the stars on Betty's map are sun-like stars, although only 5% of the stars in our local galactic neighborhood are sun-like. And all of the sun-like stars in that volume of space that Betty's map is in, all of those sun-like stars are on Betty's map. None of them that are sunlight are left out. They're all there.
I'll tell you what, Kathleen, we're going to have to take a break. I want to talk a little bit more about your aunt and her husband and your mom and your own experiences when we come back. We're talking with Kathleen Marden, who's spent her lifetime looking into alleged alien abductions, experiencer cases. There's a growing body of information these days that suggests it's overall a positive experience for those who are taken. You know, they're abducted. They're taken out of their homes against their will in the middle of the night, sometimes floating through walls, taken aboard ships, subjected to medical procedures and experiments, face-to-face with unknown, strange-looking beings. And yet, after all that, kind of traumatic experiences, overall, a lot of the folks who go through this, many throughout their lifetimes, think it's overall a good thing. How can that be? We're going to ask Kathleen Marden about it. She was part of a massive global study that questioned abductees and experiencers all over the planet. We're going to find out what she found out right after this on Coast to Coast. Kathleen Marden, sorry to interrupt you. You were talking about your aunt, Betty Hill, your uncle, Barney Hill, and the experience they had, perhaps the biggest and most important abduction case, the first to make international news. And there were circumstantial evidence, including Marjorie Fish's star map, that supported her story, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it is that scientific evidence that causes me to believe that at least some of these entities who are coming here are from other planets. But then in the research that I have done more extensively on communication with these non-humans, they always talk about how our nuclear weapons tear holes in the fabric of between the dimensions, and that destruction bleeds out into other dimensions and causes damage in their dimensions. So then I have to wonder if these entities are actually living on our planet, and we are doing damage to the dimension that they live in on this planet? Or are they all interdimensional from other planets and living here? It's very perplexing, and I don't have the answer yet. I don't know if I ever will.
Could be more than one answer. Could be that they're both extraterrestrial and interdimensional, that they're from a lot of different places with different motives.
That's what I suspect.
Jacques Vallée, a long time ago, when I first interviewed him, he said he'd be very disappointed if it was just extraterrestrials visiting this planet, that they, if they can bend space-time, they could be from anywhere. They could be extraterrestrial and interdimensional, and it's hard to get your head around that. Why would somebody from another solar system, another planet way far away, why would they care what we do to our planet? How is it possible that it's all one system, sort of how Earth is one ecosystem, one great big system all connected?
They say that they are in charge of this quadrant of our galaxy, and that they have a responsibility toward inhabited planets. That's what they have told experiencers. So that's the only thing that I can offer. Some say that they planted our seed here. Some say that we all live under the same consciousness with one creator and various dimensions and levels in those dimensions. So you know, maybe all of that is true as well, but I again cannot say definitively that any of it makes a lot of sense.
Tell me, I know you've been here before, not with me, but with George and the other hosts and probably Art as well, to talk about your family experiences, your experiences. Give me a sense of where Betty and Barney Hill's experience, your mom's and yours, how they stand up to scrutiny these days. I ask it in the context of this. I see a new round of attacks on Travis Walton, which I always thought that was a pretty good case and that Travis was a believable guy, but I guess no one's ever quite out of the woods when it comes to UFO subjects.
That is very true, and these new attacks have no substance. I was informed that the next attack will be on the Betty and Barney Hill case. I've just released the 60th anniversary edition of Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, with an update, a whole new chapter full of new evidence, new scientific analysis, and so even more evidence that this is a real case. I think that the work that I've done and that Stanton Friedman did with me in the years that we worked together has taken this case a long way in terms of scientific evidence.
Your book, the most recent book, is called Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. And, you know, you have a very broad history of the phenomena, what abductees, contactees have had to deal with, including yourself, right? You've had some experiences yourself.
Yes.
And was it a good idea to come out and talk about it? You have a chapter in this book that talks about going public, coming out of the closet to tell the story. I would think that for a lot of abductees, it might be more terrifying to go public than it is to live with the experience themselves.
Absolutely. I had never intended to go public. I know the devastating impact that it had on my aunt and uncle when their story was released as the result of a violation of confidentiality, and that they experienced a great deal of harassment from what I believe were three-letter agencies, the intelligence community, who repeatedly entered their house and did weird things and tapped their phone, that sort of thing. I certainly would not want to spend my life attempting to defend myself from these attacks. But just within the past few years, I was talked into admitting that I have had contact, and the reason for that is I was told that I would be able to assist experiencers around the world to make them feel much more comfortable if they knew that I was not just a researcher. My mother never went public with her story, but what happened was that my aunt was working with a team of scientists who were giving her a script to read every night, attempting to telepathically contact these non-humans and ask them to land on my grandparents' farm. One night, this did occur. It came in, it landed, my grandmother and a commercial pilot who was traveling down the street, observed the craft coming in. It was investigated. What we never stated was that my mother and I found ourselves on craft that night. It was terrifying for me. It had a very negative and frightening impact on my life when I was young, and I think I would have spent a great deal of my life attempting to analyze, to find answers to what is happening and why. What is the motivation? Why do they do this the way they do? And I know that fear colors one's perception of what has occurred. And when I was able to move beyond fear, I developed a completely different point of view, as I think that experiencers do over time, and this is why such an incredibly high percentage say they would not end their experiences, because when you grow older, if you are ill, they will heal you if you ask for healing. This has happened to many, many people. There are others who have asked for it and haven't received it, but many, many have. And also, people who are older have been given information. They want answers. They're receiving answers.
I mentioned about the alien editorials that they share. The messages have been pretty consistent over a long period of time. Take care of your planet. quit fiddling around with atomic weapons. It seems like the messages do involve a danger that we represent to others, but also there seems to be some concern about us, what we're doing to ourselves. Is that for its own sake, that somehow wherever they're from, they care about what becomes of us and the planet?
Well, I can tell you, back when I was a teenager, I was 17 years old when I was taken, that they told me that they had to take tissue samples to test my body for toxicity. They were very concerned about environmental toxicity. And then when I was about 30 years old, they did the same thing. They were very concerned, and they warned me to be very careful about what I put into my body, what I ate, because of the toxicity. I can tell you that I grew up just downstream and downhill from a Superfund site. Didn't know it when I was growing up. It was in Kingston, New Hampshire, a barrel factory, and its neurotoxins and carcinogens polluted the lake, the stream, and I feel certain that it also polluted the well water, because every child on my mother's street ended up having attention deficit disorder or bipolar disorder or some kind of learning disability. 100% of those children in that next generation. I also grew up 20 miles from Pease Air Force Base, which was a nuclear base, and then the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard was across the river, and that was they built nuclear submarines there.
You know, you worked with FREE, this organization that was co-founded by Dr. Edgar Mitchell. They've done a couple of pretty big surveys trying to gather data and information from experiencers about the long-term consequences, and their outlook is fairly rosy, that in general the abductees, contactees, experiencers have a pretty positive view of this. And I know there are a lot of folks who feel that way, but I know from working with experiencers and interviewing so many of them over the years that a lot of them don't feel that way. At least they didn't when I talked to them, that this is a terrible experience. It was frightening beyond recognition. They're taken away against their will by beings. Not all of them are friendly, nice, ET-looking aliens. Some of them are really scary on purpose, and they're still struggling with it. So how do you help those people? What kind of advice do you give them, and what do you tell them about going public with their stories?
Well, they are the ones who are having the greatest difficulty, and I put myself into that category early on. I was terrified. I couldn't sleep. I had the symptoms that they had. I had the symptoms of traumatic stress. And so I think I have a little bit of knowledge about how it feels to be in that position. Fortunately, it changed. What I have done is I have offered these people the opportunity to read a chapter in Extraterrestrial Contact, what to do, suggestions on what to do if you want this to end. And I do know that there are groups, particularly just small grays and some reptilians who work together, and those who are having MILAB abductions who are having some very bad experiences. And so Extraterrestrial Contact, the book that I wrote, is designed to help people who are having all sorts of experiences, but particularly those who are the most frightened or having the most negative experiences. A lot of these entities will say, well, you entered into a contract before you were born, before you came into this life, that you were going to do this. And I've told people, try to break your contract. If you can't break your contract, ask for a reprieve. And what I did was to say, if you have to take me, don't let me wake up. Just take me, do whatever work you have to do, but let me sleep, because I need my sleep. I cannot have my life disrupted. And that's the worst part of it, or one of the worst things about it, is that your life is disrupted. It is not your own. You cannot make your own decisions. They take you for whatever purpose, whether it is to check your level of toxicity, or if it is to extract sperm or ova, or to subject you to very frightening or very pleasant experiences to study your reactions.
They were studying your family, it looks like, multiple generations of your family. I don't know if it goes further, either earlier than Betty Hill or beyond you, but at least two generations of your family were studied, and they were interested in toxins and things of that sort. Were you part of a genetic experiment, genetic mutations or manipulation?
I do believe that I was definitely part of a genetic experiment. And I think that they are attempting to upgrade humans. That's what they have stated. And in this upgrade, experiencers in general share certain characteristics. And those characteristics are that they become more spiritual, that they have been healed, that they are empathic. Having the psychic sense of being able to sense or feel the health of someone else's body or someone else's emotion as if they are your own, to feel the pain in someone else's body. They have increased psychic ability. They have increased paranormal phenomena that actually frightens a lot of them. But there are certain characteristics that they all share. And a lot of them believe that these characteristics are desirable because fewer people, I believe, are being taken physically now. More people are having downloads. They have these entities enter their homes. They can't see them, but they can feel their presence through a strong electrical tingling in their bodies, and they receive information.
That's an interesting change. I want to dive into that a little bit more in a moment, and into the results of this survey that you worked on in 2018, because the results are pretty fascinating along the lines of what we're discussing, the long-term effects and the long-term aims of whoever they are. Talking with Kathleen Martin, whose latest book is called Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted.